This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. On December 19th, 1972, a phone conversation between President Richard Nixon and the Attorney General was captured, revolving around his displeasure for the NFL blackout policy. Nixon was a serious Washington fan in the early 70s, and he was just as angry as other fans in the area that he couldn't watch his team on TV. A little less than a year later, Nixon signed legislation that was pushed through by Congress preventing blackouts of professional sports games that were sold out 72 hours beforehand, just in time for the 1973 NFL season.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. Great
Scott. This time is just about the DeLorean. The date is December 19th, 1972. We're in the Oval Office at the White House. Well, maybe we landed in the gardens, I don't know, but now we're in the Oval Office. This time, we're not here to talk about that conversation between Nixon and his Attorney General regarding the NFL blackout policy. Instead, we're here to listen to a conversation between the current president in 1972 and the future president, which is current, in 2021, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Unfortunately, now this conversation was for a tragic reason. Not for something that we want to talk about, but something to be remembered. The day before, Biden lost his wife and one-year-old daughter in a car crash. Nixon essentially told Biden he was there for him, and he wished him the best of luck getting through this challenging time. He also kind of made a comment where he thinks that this guy is going to go somewhere. Ultimately, he would end up in Washington as well. Now, there are many ties to these two opening stories in this day of December 19th, 1972. Considering the nation's capital, two different presidents, Nixon, a Washington fan, Biden, an Eagles fan, and this week's guest. Oh yeah, the NFL blackout rules in a way played a factor here too. Because this week's guest grew up closer to where the Eagles play. And when we talk to him about the first game he remembers, it goes back to 1973, the season where they lifted the blackout ban, even though it wouldn't necessarily bothered him as much. But the team he really grew up to love watching would be his Washington football team. And that's what we're going to talk about in this week's episode. But before I introduce this week's guest, here's a promo from my network sponsor, Row One Sports.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings you sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Speaking of Row One, if you have a sports fan in your shopping list for Christmas, then by golly, you can cross all of those names off with one fell swoop. Head over to Row One right now. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to this week's guest. From the Garden State of New Jersey, hosting a podcast covering boxing history with a flair for dates and passion for the sweet science, weighing in at... oh, heck, I don't know how much he weighs, but pound for pound, he's the biggest boxing expert we have at the Sports History Network. Welcome in, Frank Redding! Well, speaking of Frank Redding, I had to put a little Michael Buffer impersonation on for this week's guest because he happens to be our foremost expert on boxing history here at the network. If you're interested in learning a little bit about boxing history, you can find Frank's show, along with all of our other shows, over at sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Frank's show specifically is Ringside with Redding, Boxing History from Yesteryear. But for the purpose of this football history show, we talk about his love affair for the same team that Nixon followed, the Washington football team. First thing I wanted to do is, you know, being that you're part of the Football History Dude podcast here, I got to ask you to hop in this little DeLorean. I don't know if you can see that there.
Right.
We're going to go in that DeLorean a few different times in this interview. But the first time, I want you to go with Doc Emmett Brown. We're going to 88 miles an hour. Go back in time to your first vivid memory of football. Like the first time you remember watching football as a youngster.
1973. The goalpost was at the front. Kickoffs were from the 40-yard line. Roman Gabriel was the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback. And, you know, being in Trenton area, the Eagles were the team. And then you had the Giants and the Jets. But back in those days, they were all, you know, below average clubs.
Yeah, well, in my days, I'm a Lions fan. We've talked about that before, and let's just say there's never been a high. Well, maybe I guess okay, Barry Sanders. That's we can say we had Barry Sanders and Megatron, but that was really about it as far as during my lifetime. So interesting, yeah. You brought up that time frame, the Eagles. I mean, of course, being from that area, that's your neck of the woods. Now we brought you on to talk about a different team. What is called the Washington football team.
Correct.
Why is that your team then if you grew up in this Philadelphia Eagles area?
Yeah, well, I just kind of was attracted to the whole Over the Hill gang and the George Allen and the, you know, underdog story. You know, the thing about Washington in those days, okay, the Dallas Cowboys were the kings of the NFC East. But when George Allen came to town in 1971, they gave Dallas a challenge for that division. In fact, they won it in 1972. Okay, but Dallas wasn't running away with it anymore like they once did. Okay, Washington, even though Dallas had much more talent. Okay, they had a better overall team, but they struggled with Washington giving them a challenge for that division every year.
Yeah, definitely. As someone that, okay, so I lived in the Dallas area for a little bit, and it's a joke because so my grandfather, he when I moved down there, we're Lions fans, obviously, and the joke was I got disowned as a grandson to move to Dallas because Dallas is definitely not on our high list either. I think the Cowboys are, you either love them or you hate them. They're either America's team or they can be a dumpster for you.
I'm in the middle on them. You know what, Arnie? I don't hate any team. But there's teams I like better than others. Washington's my team. But I also, you know what, my probably second favorite team is the Los Angeles Chargers now, but through most of my lifetime, the San Diego Chargers.
How'd you fall upon the San Diego Chargers as your second team?
You know what, they had the coolest uniforms in football back in the early 70s with them white helmets with the number on the top, the orange or the yellow lightning bolt. That was till 1973. Then they changed the blue with yellow in 74. But that uniform and that helmet was a classic.
You know, I'm hoping that they can have some Chargers resurgence from the Don Coryell. Was it air raid offense? Is that what he called it?
Air Coryell.
There you go. Yeah, I hope they have that this weekend against Bill Belichick because I need Mike Williams to really pull through for me in my fantasy league.
Well, you know what? If you want to talk about that, you know, Coryell was the Cardinals coach from 73 to, 77. And the Cardinals won two NFC Eastern Division titles in 74 and 75, and they finished 10-4 in 76. So they had like a little, well, last night, you know what? The Miami Dolphins 1972 team was cracking out the champagne because the Cardinals finally lost. And in 74, they were also 7-0 before they lost the game.
Huh. So you said NFC East. So when they were in St. Louis, they were part of the same division as the Cowboys and the Redskins.
It was Washington, the Cowboys, St. Louis, the Eagles, and the Giants. That was the NFC East back in those days.
Well, I guess that's true. They had what only the, because they weren't the North for the Lions. They were the Central when I was alive, yes. And I could remember it till whenever they changed it to the four divisions.
2002 is when they realigned the league and they made it so there's four teams in every division. They play each other twice. So that's six games right there. Okay, but that was a good move because some of these divisions were getting overcrowded. But the Eastern Division from the merger in 1970 had five teams in it, and the Central and the West had four until the 76 expansion with Seattle and Tampa Bay.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like you said, as they start spreading them out, we had that. Because that's probably the Texans and Jaguars, Panthers, maybe, that era. Is that when they came in the league?
Well, let's see. The Panthers, I'm trying to remember. They came in, let's see, 95, I believe.
Yeah, you the know 90s.
95, because you know what? The next year, both of them teams went to the championship game. The Panthers got beat by Green Bay, and Jacksonville got beat by the Patriots. But the second-year teams making it to the championship game, that was pretty impressive.
Very impressive, considering that my Detroit Lions couldn't even make it in my entire lifetime to that. So let's go back. We talk about enough. We didn't come here to talk about me to cry in the Lions. And as the time we record this, yes, they are 0-7. You just talked about last night, the Packers and the Cardinals. So by the time this releases, hopefully we have a couple wins under our belt. However, we brought you on to talk about your love for the Washington football team. And yes. At the outset of this, you kind of talked to me. Let's go back to a specific date. We know from your podcast, Ringside with Redding, that you're a dates kind of driven guy.
Yeah, I am. I'm very date oriented. Yes. Like I remember dates, like I was telling you, a Hurricane Sandy today, 9 years ago, October the 29th, 2012. And you know where I was during that? I wasn't even in New Jersey. I was at the Football Hall of Fame in Canton for the second time. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland for the second time.
Yeah, it's okay. A better place to be for sure.
At that time. Indeed. Well, you know what? It was rainy out there that day. It was miserable. It was wet. But it wasn't a hurricane like here in the Northeast.
Right, yeah. So you're talking, how many years ago did you say that was? 10 years?
Nine.
9 years? So that's 200. I'm trying to think of where I would have even been at that time. Probably just sitting here at home, I guess.
And that was the second time I was at the football. I was at the Football Hall of Fame the first time on November the 29th of 2005. And at that time, I wasn't really following football, except I'd watched the playoffs and the Super Bowl. But that kind of got me to be a fan again, but not the same kind of fan I was back when I was a kid. I mean, you know what? From 1973 to 77, I was a mega football fan. Then when the 78 season started with the 16-game season, I was still a fan, don't get me wrong, but I lost some interest with the different format with two wild card teams in each conference. See, back in the 70 to 77, you had three division winners and a wild card team. So there was no second best. The Cowboys in 75 were the first wild card team to get into the Super Bowl, even though they lost to the Steelers. Okay. But the wild card team was and you know what? They needed four. They needed an even number. So I can understand that with three and one more to even it out. Okay. But the playoffs were quick. Okay. You had the week. You had the divisional playoffs, then you had the championship games the following week. Okay, so there was, let's see, including the Super Bowl, there were seven postseason games during that era from 70 to 77.
Yeah, now there's four postseason games the first 2 weeks alone, so eight within the first 2 weeks.
You know what? I'm a believer, and I don't even follow baseball, but back in the 70s of baseball, you had to win your division to go to the playoffs. I like that. You know why? Because there's no second best. And the teams knew that. If they didn't win their division, they weren't going nowhere.
Yeah, it leaves a little bit more competitiveness potentially for like the end of the year now, some teams. So, I mean, this isn't the same relevance whatsoever, but fantasy football, we use that as an example. It's not a good idea to put your championship week the last week of the season, because a lot of teams, they'll rest their players because of, you know, the seedings already taken care of and everything like that.
Yes. Well, you know what? If you want to talk some Washington, okay, I was doing some researches on the coaches from the 66 into the, see, the 1981 to 92 is the glory years of that organization. Okay, 3 Super Bowl wins, 4 Super Bowl appearances, Joe Gibbs. Okay, I mean, that if you were a Washington fan in those days, you had a lot to cheer about. Now, during Gibbs's tenure from 81 to 92, they didn't make the playoffs every season. But during that tenure, there was only one losing season in 1988. They were 7-9. Okay, so that was a great era to be a Washington fan. It's pretty much since then, it's been all downhill.
Yeah, with a few spurs here and there and everything.
A couple of playoff appearances. I mean, they slipped in 99 as division winners. Okay, 05, 07 last year with a 7-9 record, 12-15. That's the years they were in the playoffs. But in those days, they were a contender. You know what I mean? A force to be reckoned with, feared and respected.
Well, that's the argument against the whole letting only the division winners in the playoffs, because you could get the Washington football team from last year as a division winner, or the Seahawks from whatever year it was. They were 7-9 as well that one year.
2010, that was.
Was that the year they played? No, that wasn't
the
year.
They bumped New Orleans off in the playoffs, and they were the home team in that game, and the Saints were the Super Bowl champions the year before.
Oh, I didn't realize. Yeah, good. Oh, yeah. It was the same year. Okay.
Because the Falcons won the division that year. Okay.
And so Saints had the number one seed,
and the Saints were one of the wild card teams. So being 7-9 that Seattle was, they were the number 4 seed. The Saints were 5. So Seattle hosted them in the playoffs and bumped them off.
Yeah, another one of those. So I didn't realize this until on this interview format of the podcast, where back in the day, it wasn't your record that dictated home field advantage in the playoff, but it was like every year rotating or something like that. Is that something you remember?
Well, back in that time, okay, we're talking about the 2010 season. If you were a division winner, you hosted a playoff game. Okay, and the Saints had, if I recall, had a much better record than 7-9, but they were in the division with the number one seed, who was the Falcons that year. So it's all about placement.
Right, yeah. And then back in the day, it was like a totally different thing. And speaking of back in the day, again, I keep getting this off the rails. So let's take us back to the Washington.
Oh, yeah.
The reason why we brought you on here, November 27th of 1966. Why is that game significant?
Because there was 113 points scored in that game. It's to this day, and I think throughout NFL history, it's the highest scoring game. And think about all the passing and all this high scoring, and that game still hasn't been topped yet. And you know what? It wasn't a passer's game either. You know what? I did research on it. Sonny Jurgensen was 10 for 16 in that game and threw 3 touchdown passes. Tom Kennedy and Gary Woods, who were the Giants quarterbacks, between them threw 3 touchdown passes. So it wasn't a high-flying, throwing affair that game. There was a lot of other scored in it as well.
That reminds me of the, I want to say it was the Rams and Chiefs not that long ago, where they had that huge, but it was a lot of defensive scoring too.
Yeah, it's a Monday night game several years ago. Yeah, I remember it.
Now, granted, a little different story because, yes, the Mahomes and Goff, they did have a lot of yards and some touchdowns, but there was still some defensive scores in that game.
Right. It was a high-scoring game. But this November 27th to 66 is one for the ages.
One for the ages, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, that's your famous line from your podcast. And again, I got to give you a plug for Ringside with Redding, boxing history from yesteryear.
Thank you. You're too kind, Arnie.
No doubt. And speaking of somebody who was a lot more kind than what maybe you see on TV, and a lot of people from my era didn't realize this about this individual. We just thought of a hard-nosed football coach, Lombardi. Let's talk about the brief yet the Lombardi era of the Washington Redskins.
7-5-2. And you know what? Him and Sonny Jurgensen meshed from the beginning. Okay, from day one, I mean, they had a superb relationship, okay, and it's a shame it was so brief, because, you know, I'm sure Lombardi would have, well, I mean, the first team was a winner with a 7-5-2 record, but I'm sure that team would have been a playoff contender in years to come. It's too bad. I mean, Vince Lombardi was only 57 years of age when he passed away.
Now, was that big news in the United States at that time when
Lombardi? Oh, absolutely. I believe President Nixon at the time, I think, even came on and talked of Lombardi, I believe. So yeah, that was he was a deity, so to speak.
Yeah, because nowadays when someone passes, they have all the television production and you get media coverage from online media everywhere. You get so much media coverage. I just was curious how they would handle something like that in a national broadcast or that type of thing back then.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it got the notoriety of today's, like when Muhammad Ali died on June 3rd of 2016. I mean, that was, you know what? That was international news when he passed away.
Yeah, going back again, you're kind of tying it into Ringside with Redding. Of course, we're going to talk about some boxing history. So after Lombardi, we had a year of Bill Austin, but then you kind of alluded to this earlier about the 70s and the George Allen era. I mean, what was it like? And of course, this is, like you said, you're getting into more football. What was it like as a fan during the George Allen era?
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm too young to remember 1971, okay, but I did a lot of homework, a lot of research, watched a lot of video on it, and he brought hope to the nation's capital, okay, because he had a good background from 66 to 70 with the Rams, never had it. You know what? Throughout his career, he never had a losing season, this man. But he was paid big money as well, though. I mean, this guy was paid not millions like today, but I mean, he's paid a very handsome salary. Okay. And he did, I give him credit, he produced a winner there and he gave the Cowboys a challenge for the division, even though Washington was outmanned. I mean, they weren't in the same league as the Cowboys, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the next decade is what you alluded to earlier, too, with the Gibbs era. And it looked like, so I saw a few years of Jack Pardee. I mean, it didn't look like he had a ton of success or anything like
that,
though.
Three seasons. He was 24-24 was his record. He was 8-8, 10-6, and 6-10. They were his records from 78 to 79. But you know what, Arnie? I'll tell you this. December the 16th in 1979, to this day, is still one of the greatest football games I remember watching as a kid. And that was Jack Pardee, John Riggins, Theismann. Okay, that was the game. I'll explain the scenario to you. Dallas, Philadelphia, and Washington were all 10-5. Now, if Washington won the game, it was in Texas Stadium, the last game of the season. Seeing it wasn't set up on those years. I mean, Washington and the Cowboys were division teams, but it wasn't set up like it is, you know, in 2010 is when they set that up, where the last game of the season now is two divisional teams playing each other. It's the way it's been formatted now. But the Cowboys and Washington played each other, and that was if the Cowboys won, they won the division. If Washington won, they won the division. And I think the Eagles would get in there either way. But if Washington lost, they were out in the cold. Now, they started off strong and were winning 17-0. Cowboys pulled ahead 21-17. For you know it, Washington's ahead 34-21 with like 5 or 6 minutes left in the game. And you know what? It was Roger Staubach's last regular season game, too. And I says, you know what? They better not start celebrating yet. And here they come back 35-34, beat Washington by 1 point, knock them out of the playoffs. Oh, and there was some kind of, with the Bears end up beating St. Louis that day, 42-6. Okay. If I remember correctly, it was something like 33 points. If they had to win over 33 points more to win that wild card spot. Okay. Anything less than that, I think Washington would have been in. Okay. Despite a loss to the Cowboys. But you know what? In 1977, Chicago, who was at the time coached by Jack Pardee, knocked Washington off for the wild card team that year. Wild card game that year is 2-9-5 for the playoffs. And Washington was also 9-5. So they were our team that really was our Achilles heel in 77 and 79.
Yeah, that was one of those things where they were the Achilles heel back in the biggest point differential of all time back in, oh geez, I don't know, the 1930s, 32 or 34,
is whatever season. 73-0 game.
Yeah, that one.
About? Uh-huh.
Yep. So okay. Everything came back. And so Jack Pardee, we have that little transition there. And then we have what you referred to earlier as the glory years or the glory days of the franchise. Let's dig into that a little bit and what it was like for you.
Okay. Well, you know what? Like I said, by the 16 game schedule, I was still a fan. Don't get me wrong, but I was losing some interest at the time, but still it was a great era for me. You know, Joe Gibbs started off 0-5. And when he first came in, people were like, who's this guy? You know, nobody really knew who he was, but he had a background under Don Curiel. Okay, he was with the Cardinals when Curiel was there, and he was with the Chargers as an assistant under Curiel. But a lot of people didn't even know who he was. And he started off very slowly with an 0-5 start, but the team rebounded and finished 8-8. Okay, now going into 1982 was a strike season. They played two games, and then they didn't play again until like, they had 7 or 8 weeks off, I believe, for strike. Okay, and Washington ended up having the best record in the conference. They were 8-1 that year. Okay, and that's, you know what? What's interesting about Washington, too, during that era? In 1982 and 1987 were both strike years, and they were years that Washington won the Super Bowl.
Hmm. So what you're saying is they just need another strike so then they can get back and win it.
Maybe that would help. But you know, the 1983 team was 14-2 and scored 541 points and had two losses on Monday Night Football by 1 point apiece to the Cowboys 31-30 and to the Packers 48-47. They were the only two losses of that year. So you know what? They laid an egg in the Super Bowl, but to me, that's one of the great teams of all time for one season that didn't win the Super Bowl. They didn't deserve to win it because the Raiders blew them out, you know. But earlier in that season, on October the 2nd of 83, Washington played the Raiders in D.C., beat them 37-35. Okay, so it was something, I compare it something to like the 2007 when the Giants played New England in the Super Bowl, but the last game of that season, the Giants played them and lost to them 38-35, but they got a good look at them. Okay, then several weeks later in the Super Bowl, I mean, they shut them down. I mean, 17-14, that was the least points the Patriots scored all that season. And Washington, you know, it started out bad in Super Bowl 18 against the Raiders, too. They had a block punt earlier in the game. They just couldn't get going, okay? And the Raiders really took it to them and smoked them. Smoked them like a cheap cigar.
Is that another? That's another reference and saying, like you said before.
38-9 was the score in that game. So Washington was never in the game. It was a shame. That was a sad day to be a Washington fan.
Well, yeah, I bet. I mean, again, there's been a lot of sad days being a Washington fan, probably for you. But okay, let's get that sad days business out of our life. Let's talk about something that's a little bit better. Can you give me, okay, we've talked about coaches, right? With the different eras during your time when you've really been a big fan of them. Let's go like this side of the fence. Give me your Mount Rushmore. So your four favorite, doesn't have to be the most important or best players from Washington football history during that time, but your top four players for you.
Darryl Green, number one. You know what? This is the fastest guy in football. I mean, this guy, even when he was 40 years old, he was the fastest guy on the field. Incredible. And you know what? And I believe that 1983 was his first season that year too. And this guy was a phenom. Yeah, he's one of my favorites of all time, no doubt. Billy Kilmer. You know what? When I was a little kid back in the 70s, I had this red Tyler bike, and my dad painted the number 17 on it in honor of Billy Kilmer. Okay? Old Whiskey, they called him. Oh, man, the guy had the heart of a lion, man. No quitting that man at all. I mean, he would come back for more. You know, he had his legs crushed in a car accident, and he came back strong. Really? Guy's a phenom. All right, he's up there. Let's see. Well, Chris Hamburger just got put in the Hall of Fame about 10 years ago, I think 2011. Number 55, another great linebacker. And Mulkey, who I spoke about on Darren's show. They're probably my favorite Washington players of all time, the four of them.
Speaking of that Darren show, what he's talking about, he's talking about the Pigskin Dispatch. And if you have not listened to the Pigskin Dispatch, you're doing yourself a disservice. You need to go after this show. Well, after you check out Ringside with Redding, but also go check out Pigskin Dispatch with Darren Hayes. He brings on guests. He has solo episodes. And if you want to learn about some history of the football, that's a place to go. So now we're going to get in this DeLorean. And you're going to go back in time. This time, you're going to steal the keys. I'm not going to go with you. You're going to go relive any moment from the history of the franchise, as in either relive or live it with it, where you haven't been able to watch it. What moment you going to?
Okay, sure. You know what? All right, just off the top of my head. The first football game I ever seen... Well, you know what? The Eagle game in 74, but I'm not going to count that because it was an exhibition game against the Giants in Palmer Stadium. But on November the 30th of 1975, my dad took me to Eagle 49er game. The Eagles won 27-17, but that later in that day, Washington played the Vikings. Okay, and the Vikings were 10-0. At the time, and Washington beat him 31-30. Okay, so that's a moment I can remember off the top of my head. Washington knocked them off the unbeaten streak, but Washington that year didn't make the playoffs. They finished 8-6. But as for a game that I could think of off the top of my head, that would be it.
So not only did the Dolphins take the Redskins out for the perfect season. Now they also they helped them out to maintain the perfect season too.
Well, you know what? Getting back to, you mentioned the Dolphins. You know what? In the 1974 in game five, okay, Washington was 2-2 and they hosted the Dolphins and it was a rematch of Super Bowl VII. Washington ended up winning 20-17. And at that time, the Dolphins were they won two Super Bowls in a row. So they were the top team in the NFL at that time. Sonny Jurgensen played in that game. So he didn't play in the Super Bowl because he had a ruptured Achilles tendon in the middle of 1972 to put him out for the season. Okay, now I'm not saying that they would have beat the Dolphins in that game, okay, but even Don Shula came up to Sonny, he said, and said, you know, if you were playing, we think this would be a better game.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how Yeah, you go back the what ifs of history. And speaking of some of the what ifs of history, you get to talk about various topics on your podcast, which we're going to talk about that right now. Ringside with Redding, boxing history from yesteryear.
Sure.
But what we're going to do is we're just going to give a quick little sample for the listener of this show because it's a football history podcast. And one of your recent episodes, you talked about NFL players that crossed into the ring and they laced up the gloves. Give me one story that you'd like to share as a teaser for them to go listen to the rest of the episode.
Well, Ed Too Tall Jones having a boxing career that was very brief, and he fought in the amateurs, okay, and then he pursued a boxing career, but it only lasted a couple of months. It was short-lived, okay, but he was with Mancini's crew. It's with Murphy Griffith, who was Emil's uncle, and Dave Wolf. Okay, so yeah, that's the thing I would say. That's the guy I remember most leaving the Cowboys in 1979 for a bit to pursue a boxing career.
Yeah, and I'd say that any listener of the show, even if they're kind of just a, we'll call it a dibble-dabbler into the NFL history, they know Ed Too Tall Jones. They know that name. I knew that name before even looking into football history, so I think that'd be a good story. And speaking of that, if you want to listen to the rest, you got to head over to Ringside with Redding, boxing history from yesteryear, and we'll be able to listen to the rest of the show, rest of that episode. So speaking of that, Frank, again, thank you for stopping by. Any last words of gridiron knowledge nuggets you'd like to give to the listener of the show?
To all listeners, be safe, be happy, and be well.
There you go. Be safe, be happy, and be well. I'll tell you what, if you listen to Frank's podcast, you're going to hear that at the end of all of his episodes. Again, Frank's podcast is Ringside with Redding, boxing history from yesteryear. As a football fan, or at least I hope you are, listening to the show, you might want to start with the NFL players that crossed over into the ring episode. Then dive into the rest, because you're going to learn a lot about some boxing history. You can find his podcast and all the other podcasts on the network over at sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. And if you're interested in starting your own show like Frank did, just reach out to us on the website contact page and I'll get in touch with you to talk about your concept for a show. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.